This is Michael O'Rourke for the Washington County Historical Society, interviewing Kathy Clare on July 31st, 1996. Today's interview is taking place at the Oregon Historical Society Library. I thought I'd just start by asking you a little bit about your background. You came out here from New York. Is that where you were born?
I was born in New York, in Ossining, New York, which is the home of Sing Sing Prison,
okay,
or was at one time, on the Hudson River in 1949, and moved to Croton-on-Hudson, the next town up, when I was 10. Moved here via Salt Lake City, Utah, where I served as a VISTA volunteer in what was then known as free schools, and that would be 1969. Ended up getting tired of the bureaucracy involved with the federal government, spent a month backpacking in Hawaii, and ended up in Portland, Oregon.
Oh yeah.
It being a better choice than Los Angeles or San Francisco.
Whereabouts did you backpack in Hawaii?
Oahu and Kauai. Uh-huh. And whether you can do that anymore, I doubt it.
Yeah. I did one trip into the Haleakala crater in Maui myself, a three-day backpack trip. That was kind of interesting. Anyway, let me bring you back to New York here just for a minute.
Okay.
What was your family like? Maybe start with your father. What did he do for a living?
My father initially was a started out as a truck driver, mm-hmm, after the war. Worked his way to manager of an oil company. Quit that. He and my mother purchased a liquor store, and they operated the liquor store in Croton-on-Hudson for about 7 years, when they lost their lease. When you lose a lease and you do not have a location for a store, you lose everything because you can't sell your business because you don't have a place to sell. So they took the next 5 years off, and then my father now works and has since then worked at Indian Point Nuclear Power Complex, where Con-Ed decided when they hired him he was too old to hire directly, so they have made it a part of their contract with every security agency that they have to hire my father. And he is the controller or comptroller. He is the person that justifies the money that goes from Con-Ed to the various contracts for security.
Mm-hmm. What kind of person would you say he was? How would you describe him?
He's an Irishman.
Okay.
I grew up sailing. Water has always been an essential part of my life. I think we were in our first sailboat when we were 4 and 5, my brother and I. And my father, during the Depression, when he was a teenager, he and his brother built a raft and to earn money would ferry people across the Hudson River for 25 cents. So I would say that he is a bright but quiet individual, mm-hmm, who is extremely shy.
Mm-hmm. Okay, and then what about the other half, your mother?
The other half, my mother is half Dutch. Mm-hmm. And let me back up. And my father's father was a steamship captain, or steamship engineer on the Hudson, and his family came to an area called Sparta in Ossining in the mid-1800s, coming from England and Ireland. My mother is Dutch. Her last name was Henken, mm-hmm, and it's my understanding that her family on her father's side owned one of the largest shipbuilding industries in Europe, which was I believe it was in Rotterdam, mm-hmm, which was destroyed during World War II. My mother always worked. She was involved in the banks, which was an acceptable profession for women at that point, and has always been employed outside the home.
Including a period when she helped your father run the liquor store then?
No, then they ran it together. But okay, that's being employed outside the home.
Right, sure, yeah. And how would you describe her?
One of seven children, the youngest of seven. Very close-knit, very close family ties. And not an activist to any sense, just involved with her family, and that was it.
You say not an activist in any sense. So was there activism on your father's part?
Well, no, but I think simply by the fact that he was a man, he was more verbal on any issue that that might interest him, where my mother would be less verbal, which would be typical for that period.
Your mother and your father, what were their politics?
Oh, straight-laced Republicans.
Straight-laced Republicans, okay.
Absolutely, all the way down the line.
And are they? Do they consider themselves political people? I mean, do they take a
an
interest in politics?
No.
They just vote Republican.
All politics are crooks, that sort of thing, but they're Republicans.
You have brothers and sisters as well?
I have one brother. He owns a chain of restaurants and lives in Los Angeles and travels to Hawaii and other places in the States where his restaurants are located. I might add that the town that I grew up in, Croton on Hudson, was the site of the first Communist Party in the United States. And the politics in this town were extreme. I grew up in the 60s when everyone, you know, it was the hippie era. Yet I grew up with cross burnings in New York and beatings of people because they happened to be Jewish, and severe divisions between the non-Catholics and the Catholics. So it was a very interesting area. Still is.
Was your family Catholic then?
No. No, but many relatives were.
And what was your childhood like there in New York? What kinds of experiences did you have? I mean, you already mentioned a couple of it.
I spent my days sailing and my evenings working summer stock theater for a Shakespeare festival.
Oh, yeah? And what did you do for the theater?
Everything from build sets to act to... it was, at least at that time, there were two Shakespeare festivals. One was the Shakespeare in the Park, well, and then Greenwich, of course. So I guess there were three. One Shakespeare in the Park in New York, one in Connecticut, and then ours. And even though ours was a smaller operation, it was listed in the area newspapers of New York City as a festival to go to.
And how old were you when you were doing this?
I think I probably started when I was 14 and it ended when I was 17.
So sort of the high school years, it sounds like. What was school like for you? I mean, starting with the grade school experience. if you can remember
good
back.
Good grief. shared the same teacher, kindergarten teacher that my mother had.
Yeah.
Went to Washington grade school till I was 10. We moved to Croton on Hudson from Austining, and the teachers, up until I was 10, they wanted to put me in summer school every year because I was not learning as quickly as they thought I should. When we got to Croton on Hudson, the teachers there did not want to advance me. They were on a split school day because the schools were so crowded. You had a choice of going from 6 to noon or from noon to 6. And my parents begged off and said, no, we do not want her left behind. She's capable of learning. My reading skills were not there. And so they made the deal with the school system, and I went both shifts in fifth grade, And I was put into a library and given a box and said, okay, learn how to read. And at the end of the year, I was up to snuff with everyone else.
Oh, yeah. I mean, they just literally put you in the library and left you on your own.
There was a library. They had a, back then, they had a special way of teaching kids to read. And you had books, and or not books, but boxes. And each box was divided into categories. And you did your first lesson. Then you did your second lesson. Then you did your third lesson. Mm-hmm. And you did it quietly in the library by yourself.
With no no supervision from teachers? Or?
Well, I suppose there was some, but I don't recall a lot of it. Uh-huh. There were other classes, of course, that were necessary. That was pretty standard. Mm-hmm. You know, when I was growing up, the teachers would say, well, she does extraordinarily well when she has specific projects, but she lacks the attention span to ever be successful. One teacher told my parents that I would never graduate from college because I just wasn't capable of doing it. So it was an odd growing up, I suppose.
Yeah, it sounds like it.
Especially when my best friend in high school ended up getting into MIT and she had never applied, got a full scholarship.
It was just offered to her?
Just offered to her. I asked questions of the administration that things that you were never supposed to ask. You know, like asking the principal if the teachers were as divided on issues as the student body was. And the principal going, absolutely not, they stand together. Instead of being honest and saying, well, sure, they have their differences of opinions.
And what kind of divisions are you talking about now?
Oh, when you're the same sort of political, racial or ethical questions when you happen to be Jewish and somebody puts a bomb under your parents' car because they're Jewish. When someone threatens your mother and your siblings because you happen to be Jewish. Those sort of tensions tend to linger.
Mm-hmm. And where were you in this political muddle?
I think I had a lot of relatives that tended to be Republican, and I guess this town still had a lot of people who had been damaged during the McCarthy period. The town was unusual in that we had a lot of playwrights, a lot of people from New York City, actors, actresses, people, artists, a lot of theater people. So there were folks who had been, a lot of scientists, folks who had been destroyed during the McCarthy period, and that was a holdover into the 60s. And so I found myself having a lot of relatives, most of my relatives being uneducated, Catholic, which was a major division line, and probably 99% of my friends being extremely educated and of other religions.
Mm-hmm. So you found yourself sort of looking into two different worlds.
Oh,
there.
Oh yeah, right? One foot on either side of the line.
Uh-huh.
A good education.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that sounds like it would be. And how did you feel about the unrest, the kinds of things that were happening to Jewish families?
Well, I think in the 60s everybody was experiencing some unrest, and you always supported the people that were your friends and in any way that you could. I mean, these are the days when the school on a regular basis, instead of you would give your lunch money on Wednesdays that would go to free schools in Arkansas, or you would bring books from home because there were book drives to go to schools that had less. So, you know, lots of differences.
Mm-hmm. So were you involved at all in the in some of the typical 60s movements, such as civil rights or Vietnam, anti-Vietnam?
I was not a leader in any of those. I was involved somewhat in the collecting of things for the civil rights movements.
Mm-hmm.
But other than that, no. And I guess I really wasn't touched by the Vietnam War. I didn't know anybody personally that was involved with it. Mm-hmm. And so for that reason wasn't, you know, it was something in the newspaper and all, but.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You mentioned earlier that your family, that a lot of your relatives are Catholic, but that your own family wasn't. Were they religious at all?
I attended Sunday school, mm-hmm, and a First Baptist church, but you know, and you do the typical Christian religious things, mm-hmm, but at the same time Wednesdays were catechism days, so I would go to I was raised First Baptist, but I would go to the Methodist for their catechism, attend temple every now and then with somebody, and it was a sort of a rounded thing. Mm-hmm.
You mentioned also the holdover of issues from the McCarthy era in that particular community. Did you have any personal acquaintance with people that were damaged by that?
Oh, I have friends who I wish I could remember their names, but I can't. Who having guinea pigs for dinner was typical, because their parents, both doctors, who had been heavily involved with research, had been reduced to lab assistants. And the labs that they worked in had guinea pigs. And to make ends meet, to pay the bills, guinea pigs became a mainstay of their diet when they were little. So there were always rumors about other people in the community that this had affected. But
did you have any grasp of what exactly had happened to these people in terms of the political issues around McCarthy and
I think that the grasp is more one of hate, you know, when a kid walks onto a beach and somebody yells, "Here comes the commie Jew bastard," and other people leave. Mm-hmm. You know, I think that's, I think the severity and the, it's left me with a extreme hate of people who hate. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense? A dislike of prejudice, mm-hmm, of any kind. Dislike of folks who don't at least try to understand.
So you identified with those that were being persecuted then at that time, was
sure.
Or is that too strong?
No, I would, yeah. Sure.
And yet on the other side you had your staunch Republican family and relatives. Were they aware of your feelings, and did you have debates within your own family then?
Oh, sure.
Yeah?
Sure. I mean, that would be a given. But uh-huh. Ask me to remember anything specific, and I can't.
Well, can you remember anyone specific in your family that was particularly engaged in this with you?
We'd always argue with my father.
Uh-huh.
But the arguments didn't tend to be very long. I mean, let's face it, when you're a teenager and your hormones are running wild, you tend to be I think overly dramatic half of the time anyway. So when a parent's trying to deal with a teenager who's trying to, and the teenager is trying to rediscover the Constitution or reaffirm the Constitution, it can get a little silly. And so I wouldn't, I guess I would give credit to my father for perhaps having his point of views, and I would doubt some of mine at the time. I would reassess them at this point. Mm-hmm. Or if not reassess the views, reassess the presentation of the views.
Mm-hmm. Did you have friends then that were avowedly communist?
I might have had, mm-hmm. Yeah, I'll take that back, yes. Because when I first came out here in the 70s, I was very surprised to be going to Portland State to see some movie, because at least at that point they were giving movies for free or for cheap, and cheap was in my category. There were several fellows out front handing out Communist Party information, and one of them I knew, and had gone to high school with.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Remember his name?
Arthur Perlow.
Mm-hmm. Did the idea of communism or socialism have any appeal to you at that point?
Oh, I think I'm a socialist right now.
Mm-hmm. And it started then?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I think medical and education should be free. Mm-hmm. And there are some basic rights that all people deserve.
Mm-hmm. How did you get involved in drama so heavily in high school?
Well, when your entire community helps support a Shakespearean festival and is famous for doing so, and your entire community is only 5,000 people, with only 400 in your high school, you get involved.
Mm-hmm.
And I was good at it.
Uh-huh.
And so you tend to get involved with things you're good at and then continue on.
Mm-hmm. Do you remember some of your roles from back then?
Oh, what, a 90-year-old woman in one senior play. Remember having a high school. One play was The Wall, and I was going to have the female lead, but I threw it. I deliberately gave a bad audition, and it was sort of understood that I would have had it to begin with, because there was, again, my best friend who went to MIT. She was Jewish, and this was significant because she had lost family in the ghettos in Europe and in the concentration camps. So this was a serious play for her, and she got the role.
Uh-huh. And you knew that would happen if you if you threw it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It was prearranged.
Uh-huh. Now you talked a little bit about your grade school experience and catching up. What were your favorite subjects in school?
Science?
That's unusual.
It is.
A little bit.
Science and math. Absolute favorite.
Yeah. And your least favorite?
I don't think I have a least favorite.
So generally you like school?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Did you interact much with your brother when you were growing up?
I left, he was 4 years younger than I am, so I left for school when he was just entering high school.
Mm-hmm.
And I never returned for a long period of time, so I think at that point we drifted, and we haven't been very close.
Mm-hmm.
He now is married and has a daughter who was born at 6 months and who was seriously ill, and now in a year and a half they discovered she was deaf. So he's beginning to develop closer family ties than he had before that.
Mm-hmm.
But no, we don't have a real close relationship.
And did you at all as children?
I suppose we did.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, when we were small.
Mm-hmm. So then you went on to college in Salt Lake, was it?
No, I went to a small 2-year women's college called Casanova, which is in the Finger Lake region outside of Syracuse,
mm-hmm.
in upstate New York. Went there for 2 years, wanted to get a degree in art. My family said, no, we're paying for it. You're going to get a degree in something else. So I got a degree in early childhood education, a 2-year degree. Went to apply for jobs, and one of them was Vista. Was accepted at Vista. Flew to Denver, Colorado. Went through training with the migrant families, planning on being shipped out to do work with migrants. Was shipped to Salt Lake City, where we opened a free school. Left there, must have been December or January of 1970, and ended up here in Portland in February 15th of 1970.
Mm-hmm. What was the VISTA experience like in Salt Lake?
I think that the district that was out of Greeley, Colorado, was extremely corrupt. They did foolish things. So we arrived in Salt Lake City, and they said, "Oh, by the way, we don't have any money for you." And so here you have, maybe there were 20 of us, I can't recall, with no place to live and no money. And so they took us to an abandoned building and left us for a night. And Salt Lake City, I think we got there sometime in September, had very hot days and very, very cold nights. So they had a lot of so-called tricks designed into their programs. I think that I was immature, I was young, that there wasn't enough supervision, that there was a lot more socializing. I mean, it's no different than, you know, your first couple of years in college. You, unless you have some supervision or direction, you tend to experience your first chance at freedom. And at least for me, I didn't have a lot of really tight goals, and not a lot of structure. One of the things that I was very good at was procuring supplies for our school. And so I was capable of going into places where people said, "Absolutely not, I'm not giving anything to another government handout." And after a half hour, leaving with new desks or supplies. So that was one of my major roles. And then I turned into the school secretary. So I managed the schedules, made sure everybody knew when and where they were supposed to be, and that sort of stuff. Mm-hmm. I also led art classes for kids. We gave an art show and taught them that they could create. They didn't have to have what other kids had, and they didn't have to create other people's way, that they could do things of creation their own way.
Mm-hmm. With respect to being able to get the equipment out of people, how'd you do that exactly?
Well, you know, a lot of people were, one fellow in particular.
Can you give an example?
Yeah, the guy with all of the desks, I mean, walked in there, and there was another fellow with me, and said, "We're VISTA volunteers. We're trying to get together some equipment for a free school." And he said, "You know, I'll be damned if I'm going to give, you know, I'm already paying welfare, and these people are soaking me for this and that." I said, "Wait a minute, that's not what this is. This is a school. This is to teach these people so we can get them off of the welfare. This is a way to change them." And he started looking at it from a different angle. So it's just a matter of presenting the right angle to the right person in the right way. We gave him a different point of view, and he was willing to give us the desks.
Mm-hmm. This was a businessman in Salt Lake somewhere?
This was a businessman somewhere in Salt Lake. Mm-hmm. We tried getting art supplies. Well, they were expensive, so instead our canvas turned into wallpaper, and we found that we could get all the wall paint we wanted from one store, so the kids would paint with wallpaper as their canvas, the backside, mm-hmm. And house paint. It works just as well as anything else.
Mm-hmm. So you had to be a little bit inventive and resourceful, it sounds like.
Oh, sure. Yeah. Sure.
Where did this come out of, do you think, your background in high school of helping stage these productions? Where do you think you got these skills?
I haven't a clue. Perhaps it's an ingrown, who knows?
Now, you said that you thought the organization was corrupt.
They did lots of things. One fellow was put with a family that had living quarters that was overrun with rats. and he was actually bitten by a rat. And when he went to get some help from the people who were training us.
A little bit on this story, because we were into the leader on the tape.
Okay. During training, you were sent for 1 weekend to spend time with the migrant families. The migrant family I spent time was great. There were 8 children and 2 adults in a 16-foot trailer. There were bunk beds built everywhere out, so you had a bathroom and then and a kitchen area, and then everything else in the 16-foot trailer was bunk beds. And I watched the first landing of a human on the moon, the first step that somebody made on the moon, from one of the absolute poorest family situations in America, from a migrant family that had nothing, in a farm out in the corner of a farm in a 16-foot made, you know, that was housing 10 people, with one kid having to run outside and hold the antenna so the reception would be good on a black and white portable television.
A small one.
A very small one. My weekend was rather successful. They were wonderfully kind people. One fellow, however, was sent to a family where the house was overrun with rats, and when he was bitten by a rat, the administration of the school that we were attending basically ignored it. And he ended up hospitalized with a severe infection.
This is one of your fellow volunteers?
One of my fellow volunteers. I was in a situation where it was the 4th of July and I was standing on a wall talking to several people. And a fellow came up and he was black. And I must have been 18 and I had a couple of beers. And in New York, 18 was legal drinking age. I doubt it was that in Colorado though. A fellow came up and he was one of the instructors and he was quite tall. And he thought that he would be fooling around. And he grabbed me below the knees on my legs to throw me over his shoulder. Well, he had had some alcohol and he missed, and I landed head first on the concrete and was knocked out. The administration, he freaked out. He was a Vietnam volunteer. He freaked out and went through a plate glass window, similar to the windows here. We're talking about at a college student building, so you had plate glass windows that were the entire wall of a building.
This is the fellow that inadvertently
dropped me. So he ran through a plate glass window. When I finally came to, one instructor escorted me up to the administration floor and tried to rape me on the way. But someone came down the hall and was interrupted. I had a severe concussion and I was going in and out of consciousness. Female, they locked me in a room, a dark room, so I wouldn't be disturbed. A female instructor came in. I tried to explain to her what was happening, and she goes, "Oh no, dear, he was just making sure you weren't hemorrhaging." Well, you know, you don't hemorrhage from below the waist when you've had a head injury. Someone else broke into that room and took my hand and sat with me. And there was a battle that went on amongst the students that had seen what happened and some of the administration, demanding that I be taken to a hospital. Where was I? And meanwhile, I was just in a back room. And I must have stayed in that back room for probably an hour. They finally did take me to a hospital. I had a severe concussion. They took me back to the dorm and someone had to stay with me all times for the first 24 hours. The fellow that ran through the plate glass window was not cut at all. Your basic miracle. He wasn't injured. The next morning, the administration, when classes started, said that this was a lover's quarrel. I didn't even know the fellow's name other than that he was an instructor. We had been there a week. You don't really, I don't know about you, but I don't have lovers that I've, you know, when I've only known them a week. So So it's a corrupt administration that can't say, hey, well, this was an accident, that never asked any questions. Mm-hmm. Later on, after I had left VISTA, and I went back to visit some of the volunteers about 6 months after I had left, that particular group was being investigated for numerous problems, and they had asked me to write down what had happened and be part of the records, and I did that.
Mm-hmm. With respect to the VISTA experience too, it sounds like you had some remarkable encounters with the migrant families themselves, and I'm just wondering how that affected you and whether that was any kind of a new world for you to see this kind of poverty?
It was a new world, but I think I went into it when I went to college. When I got this degree in early childhood education, one of the things that they made you do was take a class where you could start observing things without prejudices. They would want you to have a totally neutral recording of what you saw, probably similar to what you do. You have to take down the information without passing judgment. And so when I went into VISTA, I had had some training at taking down information without passing judgment, and so I managed to learn a lot. Some of the things that surprised me were the families that would take silver needles and stick them through the skin at babies' collarbones because it was supposed to ward off evil. The one family where the father refused to let his daughter, who had just had a baby, take birth control pills because, as he would tell the social workers that kept trying to push him to let her take the pill, was that a miracle may happen once, but a miracle probably won't happen twice. In other words, he wasn't going to supply his daughter with the pills and allow her to go out and become promiscuous. She had made one mistake, and if she had the pills, did not have the pill, she wouldn't be able to make the same mistake twice. I found the people that I knew that had grown up on the streets, both the instructors. At that point, I was 18 or 19. Only 1% of all VISTA volunteers that were accepted for service were under 19. And of those, most of them went back to the communities they came from because they were so young. So it was extremely unusual for them to take me and not send me back to the community I had come from. Mm-hmm. So I ran into lots of 19-year-olds, the same age as I am, but from very different cultures, who were being sent back to their own ghettos or their own communities to help bring their own neighborhoods up.
Mm-hmm. So were these largely Hispanic?
Largely Hispanic, yes. Mm-hmm. There were a few blacks from Omaha, mm-hmm. In Kansas City. The rest, I think, was Hispanic.
Mm-hmm. And they tended to be farm workers for the most part, or?
No, some of them were city bred as well. Uh-huh. But the Hispanic culture back then, it was the brown power, and you were Chicanos. You weren't Hispanic back then. The new thing was being called Chicano. Mm-hmm.
I wonder who that is. So peer in if they need us. Hello?
Can I just walk in?
Oh, sure. Let's see, where I lost my train of thought here. I guess I was going to ask you just a little bit. Well, the other dimension, of course, that immediately comes to mind when you mention Salt Lake City would be the Mormon culture. So did you
You had things like if there was a Catholic church dance, the police would be there. But if there was a Mormon church dance, the police were nowhere in sight. So yeah, I mean, they're second-rate citizens. And it was obvious there.
Non-Mormons.
Yeah.
And I imagine the migrant workers were, or migrant, their population was third-rate there.
Oh, sure. I remember meeting a prostitute who was the daughter of a bishop, a Mormon bishop, which I guess, I don't know a lot about the Mormons, but that the Mormon, each person takes a turn at being a bishop in their particular district, so being a bishop of the church is not that big a deal, but that's where I learned about Jack Mormons, and it was very interesting.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, and then from the Vista experience, you came to Portland, is that right, or to this area?
Yes, from Vista, I went to Hawaii for a month and then came back here.
Right.
I was traveling with a fellow that I knew, had met from Vista, whose parents were here.
I see.
This is where he grew up.
And that's what brought you
to this area. And that's basically what brought me here.
Okay.